to episode 59 of Understanding Latin American Politics, the podcast. I'm Greg Weeks. I'm a political scientist at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. And before starting, I want to do a quick plug for my textbook, Understanding Latin American Politics, which this podcast is actually named after. The book is now available in open access form, completely free and perfect both for the classroom and for anyone that's just interested in the topic. I will put the link in the blurb about this podcast episode, but you can also find it at my website, my blog called 2 Weeks Notice, my Twitter feed, Greg Weeks CLT. I'm currently working on the second edition, which I hope to complete somewhere around the middle of 2019. Now, on to today's episode. I am solo today. I'm going to talk about the Venezuelan crisis and how it is being used in the United States. This is an issue that's nagged at me for its clear misrepresentations. Increasingly, criticism of the Venezuelan government morphs for Donald Trump into criticism of Democrats. This is a simplistic but calculated move, one that's been used for many years in Latin America. I think that every left or even center-left presidential candidate has at some point been labeled as a Chavez clone, someone who would recreate Venezuela in whatever country they were in. So you shouldn't vote for them. It's an absurd argument, but fear can work well in political campaigns, as we know. Now, in an op-ed about a month before the midterm elections, Donald Trump wrote, "The truth is that the centrist Democratic Party is dead. The new Democrats are radical socialists who want to model America's economy after Venezuela." And he said the same thing at campaign rallies, like one in Iowa. Quote, "You don't hand matches to an arsonist, and you don't give power to an angry left-wing mob, and that's what the Democrats have become. They would turn our country so fast into Venezuela, and Venezuela is not doing too well, folks." End quote. He followed this up with a series of tweets touting several Republican candidates saying each of their Democratic opponents would turn their state into Venezuela. So Trump says something crazy, the reddest of the red meat for the basest of his base. Why bother to take this seriously? Well, stay with me. Then on November 2nd, John Bolton gave his Troika of Tyranny speech in which he said, "As the president has said, the problems we see in Latin America today have not emerged because socialism has been implemented poorly. On the contrary, the Cuban, Venezuelan, and Nicaraguan people suffer in misery because socialism has been implemented effectively." End quote. So there we are again with a denunciation of socialism. And I can imagine you can see how these two arguments, socialism is bad in Venezuela, and Democrats will do the same thing, can meld together quite easily, especially during a campaign. As it turns out, just recently, Moises Naim and Kiko Toro published an article in Foreign Affairs about the causes of Venezuela's failures. It does a good job of sorting this out. Quote, "To many observers, the explanation for Venezuela's predicament is simple. Under Chavez, the country caught a strong case of socialism, and all its subsequent disasters stem from that original sin. But Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Ecuador, Nicaragua, and Uruguay have also elected socialist governments in the last 20 years. Although each has struggled politically and economically, none, aside from Nicaragua, has imploded. Instead, several have prospered. Under the leadership of Hugo Chavez and his successor, Nicolas Maduro, the country has experienced a toxic mix of wantonly destructive policy, escalating authoritarianism, and kleptocracy, all under a level of Cuban influence that often resembles an occupation." End quote. So, I'd buy this argument. If you're unfamiliar with the term, kleptocracy is a wonderful one. It's a combination of Greek words for steal and rule. So it's rule by theft. And when I would lecture in Introduction to Comparative Politics about political systems, I would always mention it. And in the past, I used Zimbabwe as a good example. Nowadays, Zimbabwe looks a lot like Zimbabwe under Robert Mugabe. The point here is that it's personal stealing and not socialism per se that is at the root of Venezuela's troubles, and is therefore the main thing you want to avoid. But, you might say, couldn't we just say that socialism is stealing? And my answer is that this is a useless gotcha question. What we're really talking about here is the difference between redistribution and leaders making themselves rich by stealing natural resources for themselves. The problem of Venezuelan theft is so rampant and so well known that just recently the city of Doral, Florida, directly addressed it. Their mayor, Juan Carlos J.C. Bermudez, himself a Cuban-American, said, "We approved an ordinance that requires an affidavit when someone applies for a city license to open a business. And now they have to tell the city the identities of the owners of the business and who's behind the money." End quote. Chavistas have trafficked in narcotics, laundered money, stolen food aid, selling gold and other goods on the black market, demand bribes at ports and other frontiers, smuggle gasoline, and that's hugely profitable. They have absolutely no shame, no moral code, probably no regrets. Like so many other Latin Americans, they often bring that wealth to South Florida, where they feel safer from their fellow citizens, really insulated from political reality. But that isn't socialism. It's 21st century loot and pillage. Those activities are very different from paying for social programs like, say, the Misiones in Venezuela, to take just one example, which are popular and helpful on all kinds of issues like healthcare, nutrition, and rural development. Now, you could argue that the government could not afford to make these initiatives sustainable, but the Misiones are not why Venezuela is a disaster now. They are seen as so positive. In fact, the opposition came to a point where it felt the need to assure people it would not dismantle them if they ever won power back. Now, who does all the stealing and the kleptocracy? Those in the executive branch, those who are close and loyal to the president. The 2018 midterm elections had nothing to do with the executive branch. It was all legislative. So what this means is that any stealing that goes on would actually come from the Trump administration. Now, sure, individual members of Congress might steal, like Representative Duncan Hunter of California, my old district in San Diego, who was just indicted by a federal grand jury for spending campaign funds on things like a $600 airline ticket for the family's pet bunny. But the big business is in the executive branch. I'm not saying that Trump is stealing in the same way as Maduro. He's likely making so much from investments intended to curry favor that he wouldn't need to. It's more about the improper use of the office to make a profit as opposed to literally taking money from the treasury. But the presidency is where the action would be. A big difference with Venezuela is that it has a cash cow, PDVSA, or Petroleum of Venezuela, the state-owned oil company. Socialism did make it possible to access such a cash cow. But there are state-owned industries elsewhere in other countries that are not used that way. But true enough, there is not one in the U.S. There is, however, crony capitalism, which is quite rampant in the United States, and most definitely worse now under Donald Trump. We're a highly monetized society already, but now we have a monetized presidency. His family has deals all over the world, with countries waiting to help him make a profit. The thing is, no Democrat is talking about creating any such cash cow like a state oil company or anything else. Healthcare systems don't lend themselves to that level of rampant theft. Most often in this country, it's insurance companies that actually went big. No Democrat that I've heard has talked about creating state-owned industries for major natural resources. And of course, a slim majority in the House of Representatives doesn't come anywhere close to giving you even a tiny hope of accomplishing anything so grand, even if you wanted to. But back to the question of socialism. Bolton is wrong when he says that Venezuela is in free fall because it implemented socialism well. It really is the opposite. 21st century socialism was never defined all that well. But democratic socialism, the way Venezuela started, can work well if you don't just steal. Venezuela overspent because of the assumption that oil prices would remain high forever. But adjustments could have been made that were compatible both with democracy and socialism. Venezuela always had plenty of capitalism, but its leaders handled everything poorly. Oddly enough, Nicolas Maduro also claims to be pursuing pure socialism, though of course he blames the U.S. and Colombians for thwarting his pure goals of equality. But he's lying. Two of his wife's nephews were convicted in a U.S. court for cocaine trafficking. Maduro says it was just U.S. imperialism targeting his family, a claim not many people are moved by. Sociologist Gabriel Hetland, who studies local level politics in Venezuela, has an interesting take about Venezuelan socialism. And this is a quote from a 2018 article in Journal of World Systems Research, an academic journal that focuses precisely on international capitalism. Quote, Venezuela's economy did not, however, become socialist. Far from disappearing, private sector control of economic activity increased from 65% to 71% between 1999 and 2011. The Chavez administration did, however, implement many socialistic measures. Key sectors of the economy, healthcare, social services, education, basic goods, food, housing, and utilities, were partially decommodified through state subsidies, price controls, and direct state provisioning. To stem capital flight, Chavez implemented currency controls in 2003. Oil was renationalized in 2001, and Chavez made significant and eventually successful efforts to exert state control over Venezuela's state oil company in subsequent years. This was a key reason for the 2002 coup against Chavez. By 2013, over 1,200 firms had been nationalized, including electricity, steel, and telecommunication sectors. Yet to the extent Venezuela moved away from capitalism under Chavez, it moved less towards socialism, in which organized workers and communities democratically control economic and political decisions, and more towards statism, wherein state and party leaders, often in cahoots with business, retain such control. This is an important reason for the post-2014 crisis. End quote. Now, he does not get into it, but statism refers really directly to kleptocracy, because the party is making decisions and not the people. And if those at the top want to steal, there's really no way to stop them. Journalist Juan Carlos Zapata coined the term boliburguesia, or boli-bourgeoisie, to refer to the people with Chavista connections who started getting rich. Many of these moved to the United States, hence the new regulations in South Florida. These are people who have long been despised in multiple countries with good reason. They are literally going on shopping sprees on the backs of poor Venezuelans. Both Hugo Chavez and Maduro were happy to let it go on. Family members got a nice cut too. In the United States, probably the closest thing we have to a bully bourgeoisie is what we could just call the Trump family. But in Venezuela, it's not so simple as family or even Chavista. It's more about favored. Steve Elner, a political scientist who has studied Venezuela for 40 years, says the following in a 2000 article in Latin American Perspectives, a journal of the left. Quote, several empirical studies suggest that many Chavista business people who use their political influence to apply for preferential dollars to pay for bogus imports were in fact front people for traditional economic groups and foreign corporations. Indeed, the multinationals had worldwide experience in this type of manipulation and international networks that facilitated spurious documentation for imports. The opposition pointed the finger exclusively at Chavista business people for the corruption stemming from the exchange control system, overlooking broader business involvement in the illicit activity. End quote. Elner argues that Chavez and Maduro are more pragmatic than commonly portrayed. They made concessions to business to placate it. That's essentially the same as saying their programs were not really socialist. Or take the Communist Party of the United States, which on its website recently published a story about how the Maduro government is ignoring the workers and the peasants. Quote, speaking to the press last month, Figuera, this is referring to Oscar Figuera, head of the Venezuelan Communist Party, drew Maduro's attention to the inaction and lack of response of public authorities to the demands of the organized campesinos, and in particular those of the Admirable March. Their demands include the handing over of title deeds to land, an end to state and military-backed landlord violence, often including paramilitaries, or hired thugs, and greater efficiency and less corruption in government schemes for helping campesinos to increase national production. End quote. Now, these quotes I've been giving you, these are all voices from the left. They are saying essentially the same thing. Maduro talks the socialist talk, but he does not walk the walk. Resources are not making their way down to the local level because they are being skimmed off at the state level. Trump and everyone else uses socialism because it is so simple and ideological. He probably believes what he says.
Never could be sure.
Conservative pundit Roger Simon made a similar argument earlier this year. And you can find this. Just Google. You'll find other people who've made this kind of argument. And hey, I'll start with a misunderstanding and then move to some sort of mockery. So in Simon's column, he writes, Venezuela is the shell of itself, disaster area, currently close to the saddest story on earth, given where it started. Meanwhile, with exquisite timing, the Democratic Party has found the solution to its woes, democratic socialism. We're going to do it differently. So you get kind of mocking and try to lump all these different things together that actually don't go together.
But there are three things that we can be sure of. First, Democrats are not particularly socialist.
Second,
Nicolás Maduro is definitely a lot more socialist than Democrats, but even he falls short.
And third, nobody in the U.S. is going to turn the country into Venezuela.
It's actually not particularly possible.
It probably never will be even possible.
Trump said extra crazy stuff in the run-up to the midterm elections.
Then he dropped it all.
At the moment,
just less than a week later, he is mostly fuming and lashing out.
I expect the Venezuela nonsense to go away for a bit because he's distracted.
Come early January, however, the idea is now stuck in his head and stuck in other people's heads too.
So it will just pop out eventually,
especially when Democrats try to work on health care.
Venezuela is the convenient boogeyman for conservatives all over the Western Hemisphere.
That is all for today. Thank you for listening. And thank you for listening to all the other episodes as well.